Just so you introduce yourself. Because no one knows who you are.
Well, Greg, I don't. Oh, there it is. Hello, I'm Rob Shakespeare, and I guess you'll see at our special little event tonight, I'm a Legacy Radiance user. Got introduced to it in 1989. It's been. We'll see what's happening here. Any idea, anybody? I'm seeing it, so. Here, let me try a different one of these. I do this fast. So, unlike most of you, I'm a lighting designer. My background is 40 years in theater and been working in architectural lighting design since the late 80s, the dramatic side of things. And I've been part of a National Institute of Health grant, the only theater person ever to be a PI in the National Institute of Health, a United States government funded project. We are now in year 10, which is the end of the funding cycle. Typically in my presentations, I tend to have something engaging or dramatic because I've been treading water for the last few years, making presentations about this project until we validated everything. Hopefully the end result is dramatic enough in what I will share with you. So the title of this is Predicting Visibility During the Design Phase. And we've been working on this for quite a while and discovered that, yeah, we can finally be quite predictive, but how does it integrate into an architect's workflow so it actually might be a useful tool? And so I'll just give you a little introduction. So, you know, architects using 3D CAD in a more primitive way. A lot of perhaps smaller shops might be using SketchUp in order to experience something about the three-dimensional volumes, massings that they're creating. As Revit has various packages, as we all know, this happens to be throwing a little daylight onto this region. And then I've modeled it in Radiance because in order to do our full automated prediction, we need to know something about the geometry and not just a fancy picture that might be photometrically accurate, but we need to know what's behind it. So I'll show you just basically what the tool does up front, and then we'll go into the hows and the validations as to hopefully this will become useful for the future. And that we're looking at low vision particularly. There's a very increasingly large population who are aging. See, I'm a prime example here. And just to give you a statistic, if there were a 20-year-old in this room with normal vision, and then you compared my vision, well, if it were more normal, 70% less light hits my retina. I mean, that's to begin with, besides any other scattering issues, cornea issues, other sorts of degraded vision. So, you know, it's a significant field we need to be looking at, not just for retirement homes. I'm technically retired, but I'm not alone, right? And, you know, public spaces anywhere should be universally accessible. Most people should be able to navigate a space without sticks and dogs and devices up to a particular level. So that's why I've used Radiance. So here's the tool. Basically, we run it, and I'll just flip back and forth, and hopefully you can just watch the steps, right? So we're running it through a filter, which I'll describe. And with this filter in place, we could then analyze what is what's unlikely to be visible at a particular acuity. Bang. You didn't have to make a subjective judgment. It's an automated process, and it tells you whether there's an error. The benefit to the architectural and design community, we hope for this, is that rather than being a prescriptive, you need your 3-inch white line, high contrast on a step, blah, 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 bum, you work within the architect's materials, vocabulary, or lighting as well, until you get a good score. You don't get red lines anymore. And then you know you are compliant to a particular degree of degraded vision. Okay, here's high contrast steps. I put a black stripe on them. Suddenly, the edge of the rise of the step is now visible. So there's all sorts of things going on in here. There's contrast that changes within the proximity of where we're changing, you know, putting a black stripe where it was once day. This is taking that shifts in contrast and perception into account. I mean, there's an awful lot of tools out there that will sensitize you to the problem of the challenges of low vision. Most of these tools provide you with a blurred image, and you get to guess if somebody should see or not see what's within the scene. The challenge is you have prior knowledge, likely, of what's in that scene, and you're like, you know, who knows what your guess is ultimately going to be. There's a lot of aids, again, to help sensitize you. You can wear goggles in the space. You can. There's this lovely app that's been out for a couple of years. You point it at something and it tells you if you've got Eggs Benedict or scrambled. You know, but that is not a tool that's particularly useful for somebody navigating a space that may have chairs in the wrong place or benches that are the color of the floor and so on as they move around. So it's important that designers are sensitized, but who knows what their choices are ultimately going to be. There's lots of new guidelines, which are essential, right? If you're designing a space, you need to take the worst condition, right? And there's design guidelines, and this is basically from a US perspective, right? But design guidelines for the visual environment, really useful, practical things. It gives you a range of luminance values you expect. We should all be designing by luminance anyhow, but luminance values that should be passable, should help people get through. But which ones you choose and how do you validate it? I don't know. So now we have a tool that predicts. This is a model of a church I was lighting. And there's just an analysis that shows what you're likely to walk into if you have a particular type of degraded vision. It'll also run it on normal vision. You know, it doesn't have to be degraded. It's various degrees of vision. We kept this simple at the moment. We simply use the word mild impairment, moderate low vision, severe low vision, profound low vision. Those happen to be 20/20 vision is normal vision, or the thing that they try to achieve by putting glasses on your face. And you can see it gets pretty degraded as we move down that scale. We've used these simple terms, but the algorithm itself can take in multiple inputs to be as precise or as general as you choose to be. The principal investigator of this project, Gordon Legge, heads the Low Vision Lab, University of Minnesota Psychology Department. He has 2900 vision, which means he sees the world in terms of, he describes them as luminous blobs, right? And I don't know if we're going to make a safe place for him to easily walk. But certainly, there is a stigma about, for people who use a cane or a dog, they choose not to because they feel they should be able to navigate on their own or they get self-conscious. And that line is somewhere around 2400, 2500 as we have observed. So if we can light spaces that are, or present spaces, it's more the lighting, it's surfaces, it's edges, it's a number of things, which enable somebody with 2400 vision to get through a whole chunk of our population are going to be a lot safer in our visual environment. What are you doing? So just a little bit of background so that you can see sort of the words that are going to be, whoops, go back. It won't go back. this is not behaving well. Okay, acuity and contrast, these are two of the general ways that we can, when we're talking about vision. Acuity, you probably all had a reading chart at some point, right? The higher the acuity, the smaller the print you can read, right? You can see more cycles per degree. And the more degraded your vision, you probably, if you're able to read the top line, you're only able to read a very fewer cycles per degree, right? Make sense? Make sense? Okay. Contrast, we should all know about this, high contrast on the left, low contrast on the right. And of course, that affects your ability to read the detail itself. So here's just a little demonstration of acuity. Here we have various banding. If we're using a grid like this, 20/20 vision of a young person in their mid-20s is probably able to see 30 cycles per degree in this type of grading. And then as we move along here, you'll start to see various cycles per degree. And you notice how the high frequencies begin to disappear until finally you get to really low acuity. All right? So that's the acuity part. The other part has to do with contrast. This is a fairly common contrast sensitivity function chart, which describes it. And this time you've got sine waves running across it, right, from light to dark. And you have contrast from high contrast at the bottom to low contrast at the top. So, if you were if you are younger with higher acuity, you can see the bars on the right, and if you're not, you see the bars on the left, and contrast changes as that happens. The inverted U shape is actually, that you're seeing in there, is not actually in the image, it reflects the properties of your visual system. So if detection of contrast is dictated solely or only by image contrast, the bars would appear to have equal height all the way across the chart. So contrast is really an integral part of acuity. A third thing, just to add in before we look into the tool itself, we spent almost a decade, or my science colleagues have, University of Utah, cognitive science, computer science, specializing in visual computation, University of Minnesota, low vision lab, both computational and empirical measurement sort of things. We've done lots and lots and lots of studies because nearly everything that's known about low vision has to do with the reading chart. It doesn't have to do with, can I see that step 10 feet in front of me? And so we put hundreds, if not, I think it's well over 1,000 individuals, a large portion of them having low vision, a number of them with blur goggles or things to simulate low vision, because you can't get a huge population of somebody with the type of degraded vision you're looking for, and have learned from them how to fine-tune the algorithms that we have come up with. So how does the visibility prediction tool work? This is a paper which was accepted by the Optical Society of America, validating the science behind the vision component. It's based on the work of Eli Pelli, who created what we see as the first reasonable representation of depicting how a scene appears under different acuities. So here's that sensitivity function again. So in this case, and this was confusing, I asked my science friends, and I said, okay, we're saying that two cycles per degree represents normal 20/20 vision, and the other one said 30 cycles per degree. This happens to be the middle of the contrast sensitivity function, which includes people, or for people with normal vision. All right, so it's just a different way of describing a similar thing. What we have worked on is as acuity is reduced, that curve moves over to the left. And as contrast sensitivity is similarly reduced, it moves the curve downwards. So that normal person 20/20 vision, someone with degraded vision. And you can hopefully see this. An image is then broken into various bandwidths as we see these different frequencies. And this is just some representation of breaking it into bandwidths. Each pixel is processed to provide a measure of local contrast. The threshold then is thresholded on the criteria that compares local contrast values to the peak sensitivity curve of the filter that we saw. And then they are reassembled into an image. So what is different about this type of image is that contrast that's below or outside of that parabolic shape that you've seen, the detail at those frequencies is obscured. Anything that is within that curve, the details are retained to the particular acuity of that person's vision. So we're removing image details and that are predicted to be not visible. Right? We then calibrated this with all the information we gained from the lab. So here you see a standard reading chart blurred to various degrees, collected a lot of information, ran a lot of people actually at the reading chart level to get it through the Optical Society science. And here's an example of what it does. There's the unaffected chart on the left. It's blurred to what would be legal blindness in the US, which is 2200 vision on the right. And you can see that the HDN line is visible. You know what it's like, you're taking an eye test, you're sort of guessing at the lowest level that you can perceive letters. The fourth one down is obscured. There's no way you're going to be able to detect what those four letters are at this particular acuity, right? So we're obscuring things that are not visible. We're not just trying to blur the whole image. We're taking out the information that you're unlikely to be able to see. This is the little side. There was some banding that we're having when we were running these filters, and our computer scientist, Bill Thompson, had worked on this in order to improve the thresholding effect, so we didn't get odd or too many odd artifacts in the final rendering itself. We use these images in the paper to illustrate it. These are a couple of my radiance images from the past. Some of you have seen these before. A Washington, D.C. Train station as it is, and then I added some streetlights in order to improve the visibility. It's probably one of the most dangerous public subway systems in the world when you're in some of those ambient environments with no contrast. Here we are blurring them to what are we calling it, moderate low vision, severe low vision blur. You see, you can still see the bench on the left-hand side because of the street light I added. This concluded that paper, right? And they accepted the science that we had put behind us. So, how do we predict visible edges once we have an image that's filtered to obscure the non-visible parts of the image? There's some preparatory work. We need some data, which I'm using Radiance because it's my base tool. I'm sure some developer might find some alternative method of doing some of this stuff. But right now, out of Radiance, we extract, we take an image, we take the octree, and then through some a V-Rays and an R-Trace script, we extract the coordinates of each, the intersection from pixel to geometry, the normal at that point, and what's the other thing I'm extracting? And the distance from the vantage point. So those three data sets plus the image is what we're doing to generate what we call ground truth. So that geometric data is run through an algorithm that determines where the major changes in direction are and comes up with a drawing like the one on the left, which is showing where those boundary edges are of a rapid change in the topography. We then take the severe, in this case, the severe low vision image, and run an edge detector routine over it. In this case, it happens to be candy edges, which are looking for the luminance change steps. And obviously, if an area is being obscured, there's no change in luminance across that area. We don't know where those areas are, but we're scanning the whole image, trying to find out where the luminance edges are. The luminance edges are then compared to ground truth, where there is reasonable alignment between the luminance edges and the predicted or the ground truth edges of a step, then it's declared visible. If it's in a region where it's not predicted, then we declare that edge non-visible. So here you see the red edges. We're only really interested in 6 foot and below for most areas. Declare it not to be visible. So there's how the visibility filter works. So which would you rather have if you're working in an environment where there might be visually challenged or you want to know something about it? Do you want to guess the visibility from a blurred image, or do you want to have an objective depiction of what is likely not visible for an extreme case of low vision? Right? Hopefully you'll all want to do the one on the left. If there's developers in the room, this is available for you, right? So the validation process, it's been going on for a while, but a lot of it included edge labeling, having individuals trace both not blurred or filtered image to various degrees, or what can they see or not see having studied the image. You get some individuals who want to join the line between a blurred section and others that, you know, will just follow the rule that we've asked them to follow. And we have a lot of compliance. There's a high correlation between the automatic edge visibility and user-detected geometry over a wide range of images and case studies that we've developed. And similar correlations result between the ramps and the steps projects, where hundreds of people looking, can you detect them or not in various conditions, changes of lighting, changes of color, changes of material, changes of acuity. And so we have affirmed that this particular approach and the way it's tuned is very viable. We finished some of this about a week ago, and so the statistical affirmations are still being correlated and put together for a forthcoming paper through LUCOS in the IES, which is the applications paper of this approach. So what's required for visibility prediction again? Finally, using our routines, you need a radiance image or any HDR image. For prediction, you need to know the XYZs, the distance and the normals of the geometry in the scene. In the output, you get a blurred image, and you get an analysis of what is or is not visible. We built a number of things, flags, into the system, so you can tune it in a number of, whether you're dealing with LogMAR, which is one way of looking at a vision, acuity another way. There are multiple ways that you can input data from whatever system you're used to working in order to achieve results at the other end. And I've elected for the demonstration simply to use the red-gray option. I think I'm running under severe. And there is a routine that runs ahead of this. I got it up above. We filter through the image first of all to get the header information, because when you're dealing with cycles per degree, you need to know what the viewing angle is of the image. And we also need to tell it whether it's feet or meters or whatever it is, because Radiance doesn't store that stuff. I've been bugging him for years that once I use an IES to RAD file that has feet or meters in it, to put it in the header. No, he won't do it. So, and I don't want to challenge our relationship anymore. All right, so here's the moment of truth. You always hate to do things like this. Where'd you go? Here you go. I still have a mouse. Here's my function. Notice there's one HDR image in here, which is the source HDR image. And I'm simply going to run the script over that data, and hopefully we'll get some results. Bang. there's the blurred image, or the filtered, it's not blurred, it's obscuring data, and that is showing you what isn't visible at this particular acuity. You know, so if you have a radiance image, it's very straightforward in order to explore visibility factors. So the steps I just showed you, and these steps are in a building in Miami. It's called the Lighthouse, and they employ people with low vision through to no vision, right? It's and so there's maybe 50, 60 people in this building we know have low vision who need to navigate the space. And I saw this staircase, and my goodness, they've loaded everything possible onto this that I would think about doing to a staircase. The lighting appears to be in a good spot because you can see that the tread is brighter than the rise already. We're working there, and they've added white stripes, high contrast to the middle gray. They put edging along the edge of the steps because Gordon, our PI, sometimes said he can tell the zog of a step, and that indicates that maybe there's something's going up in front of him at various times. So I thought I'd just sort of simply deconstruct it and get something dramatic. Well, So the workflow here was from Revit through Groundhog, where I needed to add the photometry and adjust them, add the specified materials, and then bumped it to Radius. I'm looking forward to tomorrow's presentation with a different, somebody's got a different filter here for going directly from Radiance to Revit, maybe robustly. That would just take the Groundhog out of the loop. Sorry, Germain. So I was actually making the changes through Revit and then bumping them through. Notice that in this image, or at least that this crude image, there's no baseboard, no tread stripes. So I did the analysis of my model and a severe blur, and I can say, oh, look, there's a boundary between the floor and the first step. It's, you know, it'd be nice to know where that is. There's a faint red line, means probably they can determine where the step is. Obviously, the pattern you can determine. Let's see what happens if I change the contrast of the floor. And, whoops. And suddenly, as predicted, the intensity of the red line has dropped, you know, at that junction between the two. I will say that when I'm looking at up my screen, the red is far more streaming out here. You know, it's just a little faint pink line that I'm actually looking at. So, Let's add the baseboards and maybe railings, just add some contrast to it, and suddenly the wall edge can be seen, which you couldn't see before. The floor edges come back, and the edges of the steps are now probably visible. Right?
Is the clock visible?
No. How much time do I have? Am I over already? All right. Sorry, you're going to starve. And so... let's let me kick to the comparisons. Which one of these would you pick? And I was really surprised that there was so little variation because it was well lit in the first place. And actually, I found that lighting, putting the white stripes on it, made it worse. Who would have guessed? And I'll just bump through this other example, which is severe low vision, which is blob vision. Maybe the one on the extreme left is slightly better because you can see the edges of the steps. So unlike this study, you saw the one at the beginning, there was a dramatic change, and this one was a less dramatic change. So next week, we're going to look at the downward version of the steps and to see, you know, what the best solution would be. So just a couple of, you know, we've run lots of test cases to see what may or may not work. This is a model I built of an atrium a while ago. And, you know, you get some great idea, which would you, and you can also use any HDR image to get the blur. So you can go to a site and take an HDR image of it and analyze it and say, does this place need better lighting? Or should the material reflections change? Future work, we're still working on glare. There's a couple of new papers that have come out in the optical world that are changing the way we might think about glare. So, you know, stay tuned with that. And there's some other tweaks we want to make. The plus sign is I'm a lighting designer. I finished this one 2 weeks ago. I just thought I'd spend 30 seconds drawing that. So my friend, the sculptor, is a stainless steel sculptor. He built this thing called Effervescence. The School of Music, this is the entry to a concert hall at night, believe it or not. So I've knocked up a radiance simulation, and this is how it now appears. They can, if it's Brahms or Bach, depending upon what it is, you put the color of the mood of the piece out in the, to prepare people to enter the concert hall, whatever the evening has in store, and the sculpture now hovers like an angel over the courtyard. Okay, I think that's probably it. Thank you, John. I'm sorry, over there. So I'm just going to make one more statement. We seek developers. I've been talking to Ian Ashton, who's AGI 32. I need help, because this is all in the public domain, what we've done. So
does it run on Windows?
Yes, I actually have it compiled on Windows first, and then only recently, thanks to Andy and Rob, we now have it compiled, at least in the Mac Unix world. Yes. Okay. Lunch?
No, it's me, then lunch.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's... Oh.